Zoos and aquariums are places people go to find peace and excitement, relaxation and education, and to deepen their connection with nature. But that's only part of their story. Accredited facilities are at the forefront of the conservation movement, working to save species and ecosystems, often in unheralded ways. This podcast tells the story of those efforts. These are their conservation tales. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to Conservation Tales, and welcome back to Shedd Aquarium. Okay, we aren't really in Chicago, but when I spoke to the team at Shedd about this new podcast, they were so excited about it, they offered up two different projects for discussion. And honestly, they're such different and incredible projects, I couldn't help but agree to feature both. I also love that this helps to show the diversity of conservation work being done at just one facility. So last episode, we talked about research into Magellanic penguins in Patagonia, and today we are looking at a conservation effort taking place directly in Chicago, where Shedd Aquarium is located. Shedd has partnered with Urban Rivers to install floating wetlands in the Chicago River, and the impact has been absolutely incredible. Today, we are going to talk to Maggie Cooper at Shedd Aquarium and Nick Wesley, the executive director of Urban Rivers, all about this project and the amazing impact it is having on the Chicago River and the urban wildlife that surrounds it and lives in it. Let's hear about it. All right. So, why don't we start off with both of you introducing yourselves?
My name is Maggie Cooper. I'm the manager of conservation action at Shedd Aquarium.
And I'm Nick Wesley, the executive director of Urban Rivers.
The executive director of what?
Urban Rivers.
Urban Rivers. All right. Very good. Well, thank you both for being here. And so the purpose of this kind of new podcast that I'm launching as part of my series of podcasts here is to talk about the conservation work being done at zoos and aquariums and stuff and the impact that that's having on the outside world. And so can one of you tell me about the project that we're talking about today?
I'm happy to jump in first here from the Shedd Aquarium perspective. So I often joke when people ask what I do for work, they hear that I work at Shedd Aquarium. No matter where I go, if I travel anywhere across the country, if I have a Shedd shirt on, people will stop me and be like, oh my God, Shedd Aquarium, I love Shedd. I go every time I go to Chicago, or if I'm in Chicago or in the suburbs, people are always telling me how much they love to go to the aquarium. But I often joke that we don't really work at the aquarium, we work for the aquarium, because we're in our department in the conservation field at Shedd. We're not really in the building itself. Rather, we're out in different communities throughout the Chicagoland area working on different conservation projects, and not just out there trying to do really good work ourselves with our hands, but trying to get other people involved into different key conservation causes that Shedd Aquarium cares about. So one that we started working on last year that's built on years of experience that we have had doing work throughout Chicago is this installation of floating islands in the South Branch of the Chicago River. So we have a longstanding 3 to 5 year partnership with this really cool nonprofit called Urban Rivers, who is a group of guys who came together with this idea of, can things grow in the Chicago River? So we started working on a project with them in 2018, where we joined up with them after they had already put in a series of floating wetlands on the North Branch of the Chicago River. We had a lot of success with that. We have seen that project grow year after year, and we thought, can't we take this project and put it in other areas of the river as well? So that brought us to the South Branch of the Chicago River, down to Bubbly Creek, where this last November, over many tireless nights and cold and rain and snow and heat, we saw it all over the course of that installation. We put in a series of 6 floating wetlands into the Chicago River that is now nestled in the joint section of where the South Branch of the Chicago River meets an area called Bubbly Creek. Nick, anything else you'd like to add about that from that point?
Yeah, no, I think you got it all. You know, our goals are really taking this industrialized riverscape and really changing it into something that is more hospitable for wildlife and people. And so, you know, we look at just kind of the shape of our river and how most urban rivers look. You know, they're kind of built in this fashion to accommodate shipping and you know, in our case, dump sewage and move it down to St. Louis. And so, you know, those uses are a lot less needed at this day and age. So it's really trying to rethink what we can do for it. And in there's no better place to do that than in Bubbly Creek, which is really one of the most notoriously polluted sections of river, you know, if we look at just the history of it. And so taking that and turning it into an actual functioning ecosystem with these flowing wetlands are, I think, just a real testament to some of the applications of this.
Okay, so right off the bat, the first question is, how the heck do you just drop a floating wetland into, like, you're terraforming. This is amazing. How does this happen?
Well, it all starts with the permitting.
But oh, good, he says as he falls asleep.
You know, we've been at this experimenting and stuff for many years, trying to figure out what works the best. And essentially, the way these islands work is they go in the water, plants grow on top, the roots grow through, and they actually use the excess nutrients from the river as fertilizer. And so we put in all sorts of native plants, and, you know, over the years, we've tested a lot of different ones. So this is all really a big experiment. We're learning as we go. And even on this Bubbly Creek installation, we have two islands very strictly dedicated to testing specific plants. So we have, you know, duplicates of them and are seeing if they survive or not and if they can handle this type of situation. So it's really a lot of trial and error and just kind of taking the chance to see if this could be a better solution.
And good anchors and GPS tags on your islands.
So what is the base of the island made of? They're floating, so you're not just building like dirt up. So I am so intrigued by this, and I know nothing. So I don't know if y'all know, but I'm a professional drummer. I do this podcast thing as like a thing because I love conservation and I love zoos and aquariums. So please explain this to me as though I'm a drummer, because I am.
Yes. Yes. Well, we take HDPE tubes. So they're like this. It's like a plastic tube that is
like a pontoon, kind of.
Like a pontoon. Yeah. Yeah. And it's something that, you know, it doesn't degrade in light. It does all this stuff. So you're not, you know, just polluting the water and stuff with whatever you put in. And you form it into kind of the that becomes the flotation. And then there are kind of two versions. One is where it's wrapped in coconut coir, so coconut husk. And then plants are inserted into these rows that then kind of grow through and then into the water. And the other version is where we fill it with LECA, which is a lightweight clay aggregate. So we put that in, and then we put the plants in there, and then they grow through. So really, you need kind of an inert medium, so something that's not like soil where you're getting all the nutrients from it. You're more looking for just something for stability, so the roots can grasp onto something, so the plants aren't tipping over, and then you let the water be the rest of it.
So, can you use like all kinds of plants, or is this only stuff where like I know hydroponic gardens exist? I don't know a lot about this either. Is it more that idea, or can you use like any kind of native plant, and it can still get the nutrients from the river?
Yeah. So I actually got my start doing hydroponics, so like aeroponics and aquaponic systems. And that was one of the kind of inspirations, was doing a garden filled with basil and there's a stream nearby, and using that. And for a myriad of reasons, I didn't have the fish yet to put into the aquaponic system. So it was just river water and an aeration stone. And that grew really well. And so that was kind of, you know, an idea that kind of lingered for a long time. And in our first installation, we tried to grow some food crops. So we did tomatoes and kale and things like that. Had lead in it because it's the Chicago River, so it wasn't really, you can't really eat it. But it worked. And so you can do a lot of different plants. In our case, though, you know, the real main focus is habitat and ecosystem restoration. So we deal with all native plants that are within about 100 miles of here and have a function in the kind of native landscape. So that's kind of our target. We do a lot of different plants that are normally found you know, on the banks of rivers. And so things that are really tolerant to either being fully submerged or the flooding and things like that. So that's really the mm-hmm. kind of litmus test for how we look at these things. Yeah.
Okay. And so even a polluted river, a badly polluted river, if my understanding is correct, can still, like, the plants can get the good nutrients and just kind of thrive?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
cool.
And what our river is getting a lot better, to just say that for the river's sake, because I know
Fair. I have a really dumb question that I have to ask. Don't y'all dye your river green for St. Paddy's Day?
And if we so, don't. Does,
not you. No, of course. Doesn't the city of Chicago dye there? Fair point. But, I'm literally curious, does that have an impact on this kind of stuff?
Yeah, not really. I'm sure it has something. But for, you know, compared to the other issues that it has, like if this was like, you know, a pristine stream, I would definitely not do what we do to it. But I think in the scale of like every time it rains, if you think of everything that's on the streets, that flows into the river eventually. So all the gas and things mm-hmm. like that eventually go. And so comparatively, I think it's, you know, really like a small hill to a mountain, you know, compared in the terms of the load. But it's a very interesting tradition. Like it's a pretty crazy thought to be like, let's just do it. Let's dye it.
Yeah.
I think your response there even, Nick, is like, yeah, we have all these other problems. So like this isn't a key one to it. But I think that even speaks to like our relationship or our viewpoint of the river. It's like, yeah, we can just dye it green for a week. Why not? Like it's already like what it is. But I think there's a lot to be said to how things are evolving and how people are viewing the river as we move forward with it. And I don't know, someone named Maggie with Irish roots, you would think that I'm all about dyeing the river green, but I've actually never even seen the river dyed green. So it's, if we went without it, I'd be okay.
That makes sense. and so what happens? Okay. So you get these, the only good plastics that we should be putting into a river, and to build these floating wetlands, and you have an anchor system set up on them, and then, you start planting plants. What happens?
Yeah.
They grow.
Thank you. Hopefully. And this has been a podcast. Goodbye.
You know, I think we put them in and I think each year we put them in. I mean, Nick, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I think each year we put them in and we've been trying out kind of different systems year after year to really see what is sticking and what's working. Because that's the plants are going to tell us what is doing well out there. We can try and guess as much as we want. We can look at old plant records. We can try and do old surveys. But the plants are going to go out there and whatever is going to succeed in that section of the river is going to succeed. So we know from learning what we've been doing over the past 5 years up on the north branch of the river at the Wild Mile, what does really well up there. And so we can use that information on our installations on the south branch. And we have to some degree, we know what plants do really well up on the north branch, but we might get out there in the spring and the summer after our season of planting and see that entirely different plant communities are doing completely differently well on the south branch. And we know that we're expecting that surprise. We're already kind of excited to see what's doing well there, but we see that with different communities on the south branch as well. We have a researcher at Shedd who, along with these floating island installations, is studying the fish populations in the Chicago River. And he's been really surprised to see a huge higher diversity of larval fish populations along the south branch where we have just put these islands in than we are seeing in other areas of the river. So it's his research question now to figure out that why. Why is that happening? And I think that's going to be similar with our plants, too. If we're seeing a completely different community of plants that are thriving on the south branch, what is that? Is that different levels of nutrients in the river down there? Is it because of different outflows into the river? Or is it simply because of different flows or different boat traffic? We don't really know. So I think it's a fun time for us to come in and kind of explore what's coming up and what we'll see over the next couple of years.
That's really cool. Yeah. And then is this the kind of thing where it's just to grow the plants and help with that? Or are animals populating these wetlands?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of different animals that come on these. And, you know, the roots, when they grow through the actual modules and they hang into the water. And so a lot of these plants will have, you know, anywhere from 12 inch to a couple feet long roots underneath there. So it's this big, you know, if you think about like a cave filled with like stalactites it hanging through. And what that does is it creates a lot of both surface area for different microbes to grow, which are really good for the ecosystem and the habitat there. It also is a refuge for a lot of aquatic wildlife. So you get a lot of fish that will breed, they'll eat the roots, they'll hide from predators there. And it really creates a whole interesting kind of place for them. You know, if we think about just the standard section of an urban waterway, it's, you know, a steel sheet pile wall that's flat, tall. So it's like, you know, 12 feet above the water, you know, goes to the top. It goes all the way down to the bottom. The bottom has then been dredged. So all of that natural rock and everything like that has been moved around. You know, there's not normally a lot of aquatic plants. And then there's a silty muck that accumulates over, you know, hundreds of years we've kind of been doing this. And so it's not really an ideal habitat. So for fish, even if the water quality is getting much better, which it is, there's not really a place to go. So it's kind of like a big hallway. So by putting these things in, it creates these little refuge spots along the river that wildlife can kind of go to. You know, there's a fish that we saw up on the Wild Mile that went all the way from there to Skokie Lagoon. So it was like a tag fish, and they saw it in Skokie Lagoons. I don't know, Maggie, how far is that?
I think it's like 26 to 30 river miles.
Wow.
It's a long way.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like we're converting like these stretches of river from like a highway into like an extended stay hotel plus continental breakfast for these fish, basically. They now have a place to stay. They have a place to eat, place to raise their families. We know that fish are having babies around our islands because we see their little eggs hanging around. So it's exciting. And once we up those fish populations, you then in turn hope that you're upping and improving habitat for turtles as well. We know that we're improving habitat for beavers because they eat some of the trees off of our island sometimes. It's a love-hate relationship. And we also see a really incredible waterfall around these as well. If you're increasing fish, that's easy pickings for some of these birds that are hanging out in the area that eat those small fish. So we see a really cool diversity and large population of different waterfowl, particularly the black-crowned night heron. They're a state endangered bird, and we see them hanging around these islands. And we like to think that it's because we're seeing more and more of this habitat diversity and habitat improvement. And we are keeping record of that as we put in these installations of what are we seeing beforehand and how are we seeing those numbers increase over years as we do more and more island installations. So Nick and I aren't the researchers here. We are lucky to have some researchers at SHED who take those numbers and do science with them and hopefully put that out into things that do in fact show that we are having a positive improvement.
Nice. I love being the voice or one of the voices for people who go and do the real science because, again, drummer. That's really, really cool. What's next for this project?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, really the way I say it is it's a model, you know, of things that interventions people can do and how people can really rethink how we interact with our rivers in cities. And, you know, all along this really has been one of the big goals. Like when we started, we wanted to get someone else to do this. Like that was, we were like, who are we? You know, and there's all these other groups and orgs, like, please take this, do this idea. But, you know, we started to realize that one of the barriers was a lot of places, in a lot of cities in particular, there's not a great example of something like this out in the wild. And so, you know, a lot of people, it's not a new idea. It's the thing that people have been thinking about for a while. But, you know, cities, in the same way that we've industrialized our rivers and they all kind of look the same, with the same types of walls, the same types of kind of straight corridors, you know, cities copy each other. They look at what works. And so what we're hoping is that this shows the potential of this system and this solution, and that other places take it and adapt it and transform it to fit their own needs. You know, and in the Chicago River specifically, we're adding more gardens, more spots. And I think that really trying to find different ways where we can take this idea to different communities and have them build their own system like this and really help, you know, solve some of these problems is where I see this really going.
With that as well, as we're doing this work on the South Branch, as we put in these islands here, we want, yes, we are hoping the wildlife is enjoying them and visiting them and making good use of the space. We want people to do that as well. We're hoping to increase people's access to the river, bringing people out with either with us or finding other opportunities for people to get out there and start seeing the river in a different way, rather than just interacting with the river on St. Patrick's Day because it gets dyed green and it's a really exciting thing. But we want people out there and enjoying it and viewing it in a different way. People think of Chicago and they know Lake Michigan, that's our shoreline, but we have this other incredible second shoreline right here in the Chicago River. So how can we get people out as we're doing these incredible steps to help increase habitat and make it more beautiful and improve the water quality? And how are we making sure that people are recognizing and seeing that and enjoying that as well? Even just from Shed, a loose tease for some programs this summer, we'll be doing some events along the Chicago River just to help get people out there and looking at the river in a different way. We're hoping to get more people out on kayaks and canoes this summer. If you want to come out and kayak, John, trade in those drumsticks for a kayak paddle. We're happy to get you out there with us and take a look at these things and appreciate them. And once people start to understand and see these things and appreciate them, it helps the projects to grow further. Kind of like Nick was saying, once we see these things, people are talking about them, it helps these projects to keep growing.
That's awesome. I love this so much. This is one of the coolest conservation efforts I've heard about so far. And I'm greatly appreciative. I try to keep these episodes to like 10 minutes and we're over 20 and I don't care because it's just, this is truly one of the coolest things that I have heard of. I cannot wait to get back to Chicago. Next time I'm touring through, I do want to come and see this. This sounds
absolutely
amazing. Yeah. I just want to focus on the fact that part of this is an aquarium who you know is already doing so much work for their own animals, but then they're also out there doing this, and I just think that's a beautiful thing. I think your partnership
so
is awesome.
Cool.
Yeah.
Not to toot my own horn as someone who works at the aquarium, I think it's super cool. I don't know how many people know about that, so I appreciate your love for it and for sharing it with others as well, John.
Absolutely. Thank you both so much for doing this. Is there anything else that you want to say about the project? Or is there any way that people could help this project?
Yeah. For us, if you want to come visit, that's the biggest thing. Come to Bubbly Creek, come to the Wild Mile, you know, take a walk on it, you know, check it out. That's number one, I think. If you want to volunteer, you know, there's a lot of different opportunities. We have a ranger program, so it's a group of kind of dedicated volunteers who go out roughly weekly to do different things. So they do collect data, they do some garden maintenance, trash pickup, things like that. So you can check out on our website.
Shameless plug for Shedd Aquarium's Kayak for Conservation program. It's up on our old islands, up on the North Branch, but we get people out to help do some of that monitoring, like I mentioned, to monitor some of that wildlife and how these islands are having a positive effect on that. And that continues to help us to improve and to advocate for more work on the South Branch as well. So those two projects work really hand in hand. So we run that program all summer long. People can come join us in a kayak and come check it out.
And it's a blast.
That's so cool. That's so cool. Y'all rock. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate you, John.
Yeah.
Conservation Tales is a Ross Safari podcast. Produced, hosted, and theme song written and performed by John Rossi. Fact-checking and editing by John and Dr. Zoe Rossi. Please make sure you hit subscribe and follow along on social media at Ross Safari and at Ross Safari Pod on TikTok. Now, stop listening to me and go visit a zoo or aquarium.